Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With Vossi and Matt Russell, if you're just tuning in on this Anzac Day, this most special day. Now, hold on to your hat, West Tigers fans, and to a lesser degree, Panthers fans, maybe to a lesser degree, Dragons fans. Telegraph website, developing story. Stand by. Pull over if you're driving. The West Tigers are now the favourites to sign Tito Taruva from the Panthers. Where did that come from? How did that happen? They have become the favourites. The Telegraph website has the story, which is broken, that Taruva is tipped to reject an offer of more money at the Dragons to go to the Tigers, where, of course, Jerome Luai is already headed. Now, I don't know how that fits in. To me, Matty Russell, Taruva's best position is fullback, and we've seen that for Fiji. He produces Joey Manu-like numbers when he plays fullback. But the Tigers have their current Barnes Kelly medalist is Jareem Buller, the rookie of their year last season with the club, who also won Player of the Year. It'd be a great coup to get him. You can never have enough good players, but how does all that work? What about the Tigers'
backline they're putting together? Are they signing him as a winger? Because Jareem Buller ideally will be their fullback for years and years to come. If they're signing Zania Taruva, it can only be as a winger, I would imagine. So that is startling news, and Georgia Illawarra fans might have lost a little spring in their step this morning hearing that, because I just thought that if he's not going to stay at Penrith, he was bound for the Red V. But maybe not, according to the Daily Telegraph.
Okay, so the Telegraph story, and thanks to Michael Carianis, Brent Reed, they've written about this on the website. You can check in. Taruva, off contract at the end of the year, had been in talks with the Dragons after suggestions the Panthers were reluctant to offer him more than $350,000 a year. Well, obviously, to another club, he's worth a lot more than that. Now, do I want it? Look, I'll try and put a number on it. It'd have to be in excess of $500,000. I'm thinking Taruva now with the runs he's putting on the board, the tries, literally, he's putting on the board, and the level of performance, he doesn't seem to have a bad game in him. He'd be getting at least 500. So the Tigers, man, I'm just fascinated by it. The jigsaw puzzle pieces that have, right at the moment, Luai locked in next year. They have Aiden Caesar. Is it only just going to be a one-year return for him the way it's playing out? You sign Bud Sullivan long-term. You've got Latu Fainu. You've got Lachlan Galvin, who's emerged, who looks like he's going to be a 200-gamer in the NRL. And you have Jareem Buller at fullback already.
And on Saturday against Brisbane at Campbelltown, they'll give a debut to Solomon Alamalo, the former rugby star, the super rugby star, 28 years of age, 6'4", real athlete. I heard some intel again on the drive home yesterday on SEN about Solomon. So he waits with eager anticipation for his debut tomorrow. But Sania Taruva, there's another name to throw in
just
the Tigers mix.
Justin Olam signed long-term in the centres. Coming together, they lose Junior Tupou, who's off to the Dolphins, and I don't know where he fits in at the moment. Heard Run Home talking about that. Where does he fit in their back line, given Jack Bostock's suddenly getting better by the week? But there you go. That's the news breaking on the Telegraph website. Tigers favourites to sign Tito Tarufa. Give us an instant reaction to that one, if you like. Appy Korosau. Is he cousin? They're cousins? Appy's there as well? Ooh. So Penrith are basically, they're the feeder team for Canterbury and the Tigers now. Is that how it works? Penrith just have to keep...
and it's little amazing. Fiji. Little Fiji, yeah.
Amazing stuff. All righty, this is one of our favourite days of the week in terms of content for the program, but it's also fallen on Anzac Day today, so we're obliged to give equal time. We've been asking you to share your stories of any... war history within your family. This one has come on. The text, g'day team, I had the pleasure as a 12-year-old to spend a rare Christmas with my father. This has also coincided with the death yesterday of Terry Hill. So on this text, we spent the day at Terry Hill grandparents were there. Vossie and Maddie, unbelievable as a 12-year-old fan. In a room was a kangaroo photo, the 1 metre print of the 94 squad. Half-half jersey. Bulldogs, Manly, fully signed from Canterbury. His debut kangaroo jersey, also framed with Happy Father's Day to his dad. But the cream, and I spent an hour picking it up, holding it over my head, dreaming as a 12-year-old, was the player of the series at the Coca-Cola Sevens Trophy sitting on his grandparents' VCR. On the VCR was the player of the series from the Coca-Cola Sevens. Terry Hill was that player. So there's a memory... there, Vale Teza, love from the Rileys. Joel sent us that text, so he has that memory as a 12-year-old boy being at the house of the Hill grandparents. Everyone saddened and shocked by the news that came through yesterday. Let's go to Throwback Thursday at 8:09.
On Breakfast with Vossie and Brandy, Throwback Thursday.
Trailing 12-10,
Langer pushing it wide, Walters onward, Khan joins in, floats the pass for Renoff, Renoff down the touchline, beats one, gets it in field, Hancock gets it on, Queensland are coming back, Darren Smith for Langer, Langer gets it away, here's the big fella, gets the pass on, Coyne goes for the corner and gets the try. Queensland, it's a miracle performance.
Oh, yeah. What about that one? It's Dello.
Unbelievable. What about that from Queensland? I can't believe it. Unbridled joy on the sideline, and why not?
That's not a try. That's a miracle. Queensland are in front now. 14-12.
The great commentary, everything about that. But I'm going to add to the story now that it is my understanding that the Eagles, who we said on this day, they interrupted. The reason that it went over 2 days, the recording of the live album, was because they stopped to watch the Origin game and witnessed the Mark Coyne miracle try 30 years ago. That's the true story. I don't know how that works because that was on this day. But they wouldn't. Anyway, don't let the truth get. Mark Coyne is with us. He may have spoken about the miracle try once or twice in his life. Mark, thank you for joining us. Throwback Thursday on Breakfast with Vossie and Brandy with Matt Russell in the co-host chair today.
No, great to be here, Vossie and Maddie. It's always 30 years, I think it is, since that try got scored. So, I feel like I'm really old nowadays.
So, Mark, that was game 1, 94 in Sydney, and then game 2, Melbourne, game 3, Brisbane. So back in 94, you followed the same path that this year's series will follow as well. Of all the achievements in your rugby league career, what percentage is dominated by discussion around that try subsequently in retirement? How often are you asked to talk about that try in comparison with all the other things you achieved?
Probably about 98%, I reckon. it's incredible. I mean, obviously, it's a great thing to be remembered for, and because it was obviously a great team try. But yeah, you're right. It's did a lot of other things in the game, but it all comes back to that try for me.
Well, we'll add to the 98%. We'll push a little further. Can you, like, is that vivid in the memory right now? Can you remember? Because you're on the other side. Remember, the ball starts on your side of the field, ends up way over on the western touchline, and then you're out on the eastern touchline on the other field. could you see it unfolding that there was a chance, or was it only in the last 20, 30 metres you thought this could develop into a try? Or did you just sort of jog along down your side of the field thinking, well, I'm here just in case?
I think, you know, when you play out in the centres, I was on the wing, I think, that game. But you sort of count numbers. I've always been pretty good at counting numbers, particularly, you know, defence-wise. So it's just the habit that you get, I think, on the field. And when the ball came back inside, I think I think it might have been even the Pearl through, or maybe it was Darren Smith. When I sort of got to that area and he's coming back inside, I started counting the numbers. And I knew if the ball kept coming through the hands that I'd have a chance, because I knew that Mackay would have to go in. And then, yeah, absolutely very fortunate that it worked that way. So, you know, Mal did a beautiful draw and pass and gave me, you know, the opportunity. And I was sort of, in a way, I was quite lucky I was on the right-hand side, because I think, you know, my biggest strength was the right footstep. So I had it on the other side, I would have stepped out. But fortunately, you know, I was on the right-hand side, and I think the other Blues were, you know, chasing over pretty quickly, but I managed to get inside him and get the ball down, thankfully.
And, Mark, when did it dawn on you that you'd played the key role, or a key role, in one of rugby league's greatest highlights? Was it instantly, or days later, months, years?
I never really thought, you know, if I thought 30 years ahead from that day, I never thought it was still be being talked about, you know, that much. You sort of thought maybe something else would have sort of come through. That was probably, you know, more of a highlight. But no, it was sort of funny because I only played 8 minutes or 9 minutes that game. And after the game, like everyone, you know, all the media wanted to do interviews and all that sort of stuff. And I sort of felt like when you don't play like a full game, you feel like you haven't done a lot. And I sort of felt a bit off a little bit because I had so much attention was sort of all around me. And I left the celebrations really early that night, and just I drove home with my wife and just had a pretty quiet night, to tell you the truth. But yeah, over the next few days, and obviously there's lots of media wanting to do interviews, and yeah, you sort of just, you know, realise that it was such a momentous occasion to come back and win that game. And as you said, unfortunately, the next two games, we lost the next two games in Melbourne and then back in Brisbane, and New South Wales won the series. But I suppose I did get the highlight of scoring that try for that year.
Mark, our listeners this morning have been texting and calling their stories, their sentiments regarding Anzac Day, especially towards service men and women, has been absolutely fantastic. It makes you feel proud to be part of this great country. Rugby League is lucky to share Anzac Day, and we look forward to three games today. By my recollections, you played twice on Anzac Day, in 93 at Cogra, in 99 at Shark Park. What was the pomp and ceremony and occasion in the 90s for rugby league on Anzac Day?
Yeah, it was still obviously an important date given, you know, history and what Anzac Day is all about. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, you definitely felt, you know, pride and you know, excitement about playing on such a, you know, momentous day. So yeah, it's a really good feeling, and you know, the atmosphere is great. You know, everyone's got really good anticipation of, you know, good games, and probably not to the, you know, the level it is now. Obviously, it's, you know, it's a massive thing now, and you know, particularly the tradition of, you know, of the Dragons and the Roosters game. And I'm going out there. I've been out to a few of the Anzac Day games. They've been cracking games, and I'm heading out there today because it's such a special occasion.
Yeah, over 40,000. It is a sellout. Now, Mark, you may not have heard Spud Carroll on the program earlier today, but he produced a line saying, anyone who says you've got to lose a grand final to win one, you can stick it up your ass, I think was what Mark Carroll's rather direct quote was. I'm going to throw this at you and do it in sort of parliamentary terms. Do you second the motion, Mark, that anyone who says you've got to lose one to win one should stick it up their backside? Do you agree with that?
Obviously I never won one, so certainly didn't win one in the New South Wales and then the NRL comp.
But what were the years? 92 grand final against the Broncos, defeat.
Yep.
93 grand final defeat.
Yep. 96. Yep.
And then 99. And then you're still part of.
I didn't play.
No, but you're still part of the group. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, had a bad run. I do claim that I did win the Winfield Cup up back in Brisbane the year before I came down in 1987. They used to have the Winfield Cup before the Broncos came in, and I did win the grand final up there. So I'm at Lang Park or Suncorp now.
Right.
I am claiming that one, to tell you the truth. So I am saying I did win one, but obviously not one in the Dragons colours.
What and who got you to Sydney from Brisbane, Mark?
We had a pretty good team at Brothers up in Brisbane. Like we were a great standout. I think when the Broncos came in, I think nearly 25 players of that Brothers squad all came down to Sydney clubs. So yeah, we had a really good team, and St George were up looking at some players to bring down. And I was actually only just put in the first grade because the winger had broken his jaw the week before. So Ross Strudwick was the coach, and he put me up, and I was sort of fortunate that John Jansen was up there looking at guys like Clinton Moore and Peter Gill and Trevor Bailey, and they sort of noticed me and thought, oh, he might be worth sort of having a go, you know, because obviously I must have played okay that game. And then, they rang me and met with me, and it was John Jansen, and I met with John Fleming, and eventually signed a contract to go down and play for the Red V. And, went down there and had my first year in under-21s, and then, the next year I sort of cracked in the first grade and sort of never looked back. So, yeah, it's been a... And I was, you know, it was good for me because I'd always been a Dragon supporter since I was about 7 years old. So it was like a bit of a dream come true to, you know, to come down and play for the Red V. And you know, obviously I stayed at the one club for 12 years, and yeah, I'm really, really thankful for the opportunity they gave me.
Yeah, well told. It is called Throwback Thursday, the segment. Mark Coyne with us today, but a throwback is a throwback to the days where players had jobs and worked. But at your time, there was a crossover. There would have been plenty of players didn't work and just played football, but not you, Mark. Is that right? Did you work throughout your career? And it wasn't just a part-time job. It was a pretty important job.
Yeah, that's right. I think my first contract was like $5,000. So I would have had to keep working, Bossy. Otherwise, it wouldn't have lasted too long in Sydney. But and work's always been important to me. Like, I've worked 9 out of the 12 years that I've played with the Dragons. And you had to, obviously, for economic reasons. But the other thing I think was good about it is it actually gave you a distraction as well, because I just sort of feel now that the players just live and breathe football. And obviously, there's good benefits to that because they're professional and, you know, obviously, they're amazing athletes nowadays. But I just feel like having that balance of having something out of rugby league and then also, obviously, post-career as well. It was really important. So, yeah, so I did the 9 out of 12 years, and then it just got too hard the last 3 years when everything became more professional. It just got too hard, like the onus on, you know, training that we're doing and having to be there. You know, it was impossible to hold on to a job, so I had to toss it in for my last 3 years. But then when I retired, it wasn't too hard for me to migrate back and get used to work again.
And you've had some significant professional success in retirement, Mark, but I don't want to go there just yet. Throwback Thursday, I'll throw back to 1998 when I was a reporter at Win TV in Wollongong. I attended the first St George Illawarra pre-season training event at Beaton Park, where it was like an old blue light disco, girls on one side, boys on the other, except it was Illawarra Steelers on one side, St George Dragons on the other. Do you remember that day at Beaton Park and just a few of the... I suppose the difficulties the joint venture had before you captained for the first time St George Illawarra at Sydney Olympic Park in front of more than 100,000 fans.
Yeah, it was sort of really weird when, you know, the announcement was made, and then, you know, obviously the two squads came together. But I think sort of Paul McGregor and I, you know, we played against each other a bit, you know, in club games and also at Origin level, but Paul and I, you know, and definitely to Paul's credit as well, is that we just got together and said, mate, we got to make sure that you know, we lead the way with this, because if we were, as the leaders of the two clubs, if we were really negative towards it, then, you know, all the other players would pick up that vibe. So, no, we made a pledge together, Paul and I, that we were going to try and make this work. So we were very inclusive. We tried to be very inclusive of, you know, of both groups. And then eventually, you know, I think that worked well as we got through pre-season. And then obviously when we had that, that wasn't my best game, actually, that game against the Rabbits. It was against Parramatta, wasn't it? Parramatta at the opening of Homebush. It wasn't my best game, but it was an amazing experience to sort of lead out with Mary, you know, onto that stadium with 100,000 people there. Like, I've never run out in front of a crowd that big before. So, yeah, it was pretty special to be a part of that. And then I think just over time, as we sort of started winning games and going okay, then obviously we got great momentum towards the back end of the year to get through to the grand final. So, yeah, so it was a really good first year, and one, you know, I think that the whole club, both clubs, can be proud of about how they went around doing, you know, making that club successful straight away.
Mark, when we teed you up for our Throwback Thursday segment, this wasn't on the agenda. Sadly, became part of the agenda. The passing yesterday of Terry Hill. Obliged to ask you about that because you played rep football with Terry and of course, played against him at club level. And that, but in your games for Australia, you would play with Terry. Did you have a room with Terry? Do you have a story about Terry? The sledging, the pranks, the jokes, all of that. He was certainly larger than life.
Oh, I remember. He was certainly larger than life. Look, Terry and I had probably we had great battles, you know, both at club level and then obviously state of origin levels. We had some great battles, and he was by far the best sledger I've ever come across. He was phenomenal. I can't remember any of the sledges he directed at me, but I know he gave me spray every now and again. But then we got to play together in the Kangaroos, and we were basically sort of centre partners. So you know, I got on Terry really well, and. And it's just really tragic, you know, what happened. You just can't believe that, you know, that someone like him who's larger than life is not with us anymore. So yeah, it's a very sad day yesterday when I heard that news, and you know, go out and send my condolences to all of his friends and family. But yeah, he was a really good larrikin. I remember like in the Kangaroos for the '95 World Cup tour. He was just always trying to have. He'd always have a scam going, trying to get money. And he used to collect. I think he used to work out because him and Bezo used to get, you know, excess gear, you know, whether it's kangaroo tracksuits and all that sort of stuff. He'd go out and sell it to locals to get a bit of extra coin. Terry says he was. He'd all go, what the hell is he get doing that for? But yeah, he used to go out and then he'd swap stuff and get he'd swap up and get something better and better. Then he'd sell that. Like he was a real character, Terry. But. Yeah, very, very sorely missed, I'm sure he's going to be.
Mark, on the, well said, on the text line, Martin says, I volunteer at Sydney Children's Hospital. One day a nurse called Sophie joined in a rugby league chat I was having with a parent. Of course, I was promoting the Dragons, says Martin. The nurse said, I follow the Dragons as well. You might know my dad, Mark Coyne. Martin said, yes, I know him. Nice. Sophie is doing great work. So, Mark, how's life for you and the family these days? What's keeping Mark Coyne busy and active these days?
I still do a bit of training. I can't do as much as I used to because the knees are a bit chonky nowadays, but I still try and exercise every day. I've got a little sort of gym at home, which I use. So I try and start the day with that. But I'm still working, for EML, which I've been there for about 15 or 16 years. So I'm still doing a few days with them. And then, other than that, I'm dealing with some renovations at the moment at home. So I had some bad flooding. Oh. Well, Gus had it as well because Gus is my next door
neighbour. Yeah, wow. We won't even go. That's part two of the story. The story's from over the fence about Gus.
Yeah. But no, I'm working 3 days a week, and I'm really enjoying that. I've sort of got a little bit involved with the Dragons because I'm good mates with Shane Flanagan. Shane asked me, would I get sort of involved with, you know, Mark Taylor, who's a good mate as well, and we're doing a bit of stuff with the leadership group, and we're also doing some other stuff with the chairman, just trying to, you know, get a better network happening from a business point of view for the club. So I'm really enjoying being back involved with the Dragons, and you know, obviously, you know, pretty excited that Shane's there, and obviously starting to see some results.
All right, Mark, and a real quick one to finish. So Menai Dragon on the text just said, great play for the Dragons, club legend. What was the best player you came up against in the centres? So your toughest centre opponent, like ET, Laurie Daly, he says, and others. Want to nominate one? Toughest centre, the hardest centre you came up against?
Yeah, no, I think, obviously all those guys were great. But Steve Ranoff, he's by far, he was my toughest competitor. He had this fend that was just like nothing else I've ever had. He could fend and accelerate at the same time. And yeah, he's probably gave me the most trouble. He burnt me a couple of times, the Pearl. So
he burnt plenty. Good on you, Mark. A great guest on Throwback Thursday, and I'm pretty sure not just Dragons fans, but rugby league fans really happy to hear you're doing well, mate, and that you'll always be around the game. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Corny.
Thanks, Matty. Thanks, Lossie. Good on you guys.
Just confirming, 30 years since the miracle try, Mark, and it does not get old. The try doesn't. You do, but the try doesn't. That's a nice way to finish. Isn't that lovely? I've said that. See you, Mark. Mark Coyne. 30 years on from the miracle try, and we'll celebrate the actual day later in the year. Breakfast with Vossie and Matt Russell this morning, powered by Kubota. They got the tractors, they got the lawnmowers, they got Land Pride attachments, and Sonos has got the sound gear. Not a bad double, actually. More in a moment.